The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the management and staff of Guardian Radio.
With early detection comes early prevention.
Put lead in your pencil, make you feel like a champion.
Rise up again, let nothing keep you down. To live your best,
hear the urologist speak.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
Think you're losing grip of your manhood, don't give up on hope.
Don't be ashamed, it's time to take control. Get some help from the urologist.
Good evening, Bahamas. This is Bahamian urologist Dr. Gregory Pinto and my co-host, as always, Dr. Wesley Francis, who thankfully doesn't have an emergency today. He's a surgical oncologist and general surgeon, and we are pleased to have, by popular demand, back in the studio, the well-known and well-loved Mr. Calvin Green, who is a veteran of the tourism sector, and he's also a youth leader and a church leader. Good evening, Mr. Calvin Green. Good evening, Dr. Francis.
Good evening, Dr. Pinto. Good evening, Dr. Francis.
So we have an interesting talk. As always, we're trying to save the nation. We're trying to uplift the nation. A few inspiring quotes. This is going to be a trend for this show. First one, worrying is like a rocking chair. It gives you something to do, but takes you nowhere. There is no elevator to success. You have to take the stairs. There's no shortcut. There are too many Bahamians that want to take a shortcut, and it's usually the wrong way. There will always be someone who doesn't see your worth. Never let that be you. So always believe in yourself and never let anyone tear you down. And as you'll see in life, there's a lot of black crab syndrome in this country. The more success you have, the more people are going to tear you down. One of my mentors, Dr. Reginald Nimoy, always would say that no dog barks at a parked car. So you got to be moving somewhere for someone to be barking at you. So we have a country in crisis. We always speak about this, and we always try to save the young men in particular. But the Prime Minister, the Right Honorable Philip Brave Davis, recently in a speech spoke about the crisis of young men in our country. And that's something that we all understand and we all can come to grips with. He mentioned about the persons leaving school without proper skills to be successful. He talked about students leaving with a diploma, only about 46% meet the minimum requirements. He spoke about women really outshining the men on in every aspect of the academia, which is very troubling. 90% of inmates being behind bars are male. The vast majority of men of murders, persons are men, and they are almost certainly always murdered by another man. There's a lot of violence. There's a lot of anger in our society. So among young men, Prime Minister Davis said that close to 1 in 5 is unemployed. So the statistics are very grim. There are a lot of young men who are dealing with depression, anxiety, stress, insomnia. And I mean, I'll ask the question, how many of us really wake up and we feel rested? We sleep, but we are never really rested. Most of us never really fully recover from often a very taxing and difficult day. And we are mentally, physically, and emotionally drained from that day. And we just keep going on and the cycle continues. And our very souls are tired. And the average Bahamian is just basically treading water. They're barely making it. There is a lot of talk about the suicide rate going up. It jumped up by almost 70%. There are a lot of men who are in crisis, and we talk about physical suicides, but how many hundreds of men in this country live their life almost suicidal, whether it's sleeping recklessly with 6 different women and not using a condom? That's Russian roulette. Hepatitis can give you liver cancer and kill you even faster than HIV or AIDS. We talk about men who drive drunk every Friday, every Saturday, no seatbelt. They're suicidal. Most men in this country see no tomorrow. They have no hope. They don't look forward to anything. Most of us in this country, unfortunately, just do our job because we're trying to make ends meet. 70 to 80%, and I remember this was a statistic from a study, of Bahamians hate their job. And that's startling. You're not going to do well. You're not going to strive for better if you hate your job. What do you think the problem with our young men is, Mr. Calvin Green?
Well, I want to begin first with a question, and this, and that question is, why is this happening? Why is this happening to our men?
And not our women.
Yeah.
Why are our women shining?
Yeah.
I mean, we can talk about the fatherless nation, women running most households, but women are able to succeed despite that, despite them not knowing their father or not having their father in their life for the most part. And that's more than 50%, 60%, even 70% of young girls in this country.
Yeah. And so what do we need to do? What do we know to be the root causes? And how can our nation fix this? Because as I was preparing and thinking about the show tonight, and I always use this as an example, you can drive along Blue Hill Road and find at least 6, 7, 8 young men just in a state of disrepair, walking aimlessly, tattered, nowhere to go. I'm in, and I say to myself, how do they get to that stage? What happens? I mean, they seem like the crisis age is between 15 and 29. 15 and 29 seem to be the crisis age, fresh out of high school. As I think about, we have June of next year, a lot of young men will be graduating. What are they going to be doing? Where do they go? You know, how do we prepare for them? They are only going to add to the numbers that we see already walking along our streets that no place seems to have no direction. So what do we do? I mean, how do we fix this problem? Are we putting too much pressure on our young men? Do they have to leave school early to take care of family financial needs? I'm told that some don't even come to school because they've got to go work at a very early age. So when you have to work and you have no education and you fall through the cracks, as you say, what do we do?
I'll ask this question, Dr. Francis. Do you think the average young Bahamian man loves his country, that he wants to see better for his country, that he sees a better future for his country and he wants to contribute to the betterment of his country? Or do you think there's just across the board apathy?
I don't think that's a black or white question, you know? I think there's a lot of shades of gray there. I think that there are many men who love their country. I think people love their country when they realize and they have some pride in their country. They realize the opportunities that they can get. But certainly when you're in a state where you don't see any opportunities, the educational system is failing you, where, you know, everywhere there's poverty all around you and apathy, you know, you internalize all that and then you express it, right? And so then you get the expression of, I don't love this country, really. Basically what they're saying is they don't have no opportunity here, right? They don't see themselves progressing. And I think that's where you get that feeling from. I still feel like we just have to reach young men. They have to be reached. There's not a whole lot of internal motivation there. We have to find something to motivate them externally, because if you take those same young men and put them in a situation where they can thrive, you know, they will thrive. You just got to find what that situation is. They may thrive at crime, you know. You know, to be a good criminal, you have to have some sort of smarts, right? You can take that same smarts and put it in a positive light. So it's just the energy that they have. You somehow have to channel it in a positive way. And I think the we have to then establish programs to try to do that. That's not easy, though. But I think that's what we have to do.
I think when we can debate what is the most destructive force facing our country and facing the future of our country, we can talk about all the non-communicable diseases, the hypertension, the unhealthy lifestyle, the obesity, the diabetes, the overwhelming number of cancers. But really, it's a lost generation of young men who are perpetrating crimes, who are reckless in their behavior, who are creating a fatherless society, who don't see any purpose in living for today or for tomorrow. And if we don't save half of our country, is our men. And if half the country are in turmoil, we're in big, big trouble. We're in big, big trouble. We need to save our young men whatever way possible.
Well, you know, Doc, what I'd like to say is, you know, we could build nice hotels and roads, and we could develop good infrastructure. But if we don't have good human resources, that's a problem. That's a problem. And so all the nice things we could build, and the fellow walks and breaks down the sign, or he runs into the wall and breaks. I mean, we have to develop, and we have to build better human beings, better men. I don't want to concentrate on, because I think the women in our country are doing quite well. I mean, they make more money, seem to make more money than us. They have better jobs. And the men, a lot of the men send these women to school, educate them, and after they have received their degree or whatever, they say, we're not equally yoked anymore. So they move on. So the fellow who sent you to school, what do we do now? And these are the kinds of issues that a lot of them are getting women pregnant. So they got to go at a very early age to take care of these children. Some of them, the ones who do.
I can recall that I was speaking, this was like 2 years ago, to someone who was heavily involved in the National Merit Scholar Program, where the top high school students around the world, throughout the Bahamas archipelago, come together and you honor the very top. And it was always remarked that obviously women are dominating. Young women are dominating. Young girls are dominating. Young female teenagers are dominating. But he said there are many very brilliant young men out there who are succeeding.
Yeah.
But the most troubling thing he would say is when they would speak about their future and what they want to do, they always spoke about never coming back to the Bahamas. That was part of their goal. That was what they look forward to. They don't want to come back. They want to move on to brighter and better. They think that doesn't exist in their own country. So when we have the best and the brightest of our young men aspiring to never come back and build our own country, that is even more troubling, because even when we can create success stories, if they never come back, our country is doomed. Our future is doomed. I don't know how we're going to rectify that. I don't know how we're going to reverse that. There are many reasons for their decision not to come back. Crime is also at the forefront of that. But we have a very beautiful country in many ways. We have so many opportunities. We have religious freedom. We have elections that are fair and free of violence. We have educational opportunities that many countries do not have. You can go to the University of the Bahamas and get free education, which is an important fundamental stepping stone to go on and even do higher things such as getting your MBA or your master's degree. Not many places in the world you can say that. We have for all the knocks that Princess Margaret Hospital takes, we still have at the core of it all a very good healthcare system.
We do.
We do have a very solid surgical department at the Princess Margaret Hospital. We have every specialty, subspecialty, persons who have trained all around the world. You can get cutting edge surgery at Princess Margaret Hospital. They were conjoined twins who were separated at Princess Margaret Hospital. Do you hear about that?
No.
Very little is said of the great landmarks that have been made. You, Dr. Francis, have had many first surgeries for the country. I've had many first surgeries for the country. We try to propel to the next level, but there's so much negativity out there that once you label Princess Margaret Hospital, and we spoke about this last week, as somewhere that you just go to die, it's difficult for someone to reverse that mindset, and that's also very troubling.
Well, you know, Doc, you know, by you saying that, I think Bahamians, in a way, and I'm going to say this, they live on negativity. Everything to them, listen, I love this country. I could have been born in a country, I wouldn't call the name, where I enjoy a very good life in this country. And if you really want to have a good life in this country, you could. But you got to prepare for it. You got to do things that will help you to enjoy this country. Outside the United States and Canada, no, we don't have super highways, and you can't drive from Georgia to New York, but I could go from Nassau to Grand Bahama. I could go to Cat Island.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned America, you mentioned Canada. We in the Bahamas, we don't have racism pulling us down. The color of our skin is not going to be any impediment to our success at all. Absolutely not. So we don't need to deal with what African Americans need to do with, or Afro-Caribbean persons need to deal with in France or United Kingdom or in Canada. So the sky is the limit, and we have so many opportunities here. We have one of the best climates in the world. We have, I would say, arguably the most beautiful beaches, the most tranquil and beautiful waters in the world.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But do we seize the opportunities that God has given us?
No, we don't. We don't.
We take it for granted.
Yeah, we complain too much. Every union is complaining about this, that, the next thing. And, you know, one of the biggest challenges in our country also is productivity. Productivity, people coming to work and working. I always give the example when I was in the private sector. You probably get out of a person 2 to 3 hours of work. So what do they do? They're supposed to be, they expect to come to work. You say 8 o'clock, they won't come to work whatever time they feel like. Then they go drink coffee, do whatever they do. Then you got to go pick up the children. That takes, no, lunch, I forget lunch. Lunch is another hour, pick up the children. Then that takes about 2 hours. So by the time you get back to getting the work, it's about 2 or 3 hours of work. But yet you want more money.
Yeah, that's, you know, that structure, that's accountability. That's monitoring, evaluations, you know. People don't like that kind of process, right? Because that puts a microscope on them and they determine their productivity. That's something that I think across the board we have challenges with. And I agree with you on that. And then when you try to make people more accountable, they feel like it's a personal thing, right? You're trying to keep me down. Or you don't want me to succeed, blah, blah, blah. But I mean, you know, if you're paid to do 8 hours of work, that's what you should do. And you should take pride in what you're doing. And people, accountability is important. And you have to be held accountable for what you do.
But the Hammond's dog don't like accountability. They prefer, they want you to allow them to do whatever they want to do. And when you confront them, it becomes you the bad guy.
Yeah, not here.
And I think the typical Bahamian worker is living week to week, month to month, and a lot of that is their own undoing, where they're going to have enormous credit card debt, where they have 2 cars and they have car loans to pay every month. They get a house that is beyond their reach and they're struggling to pay a mortgage, or they struggling to pay the rent, or the salary deduction for furniture on layaway, et cetera, et cetera. By the time some persons get their salary, 70% is already gone. And they use that remaining 30% just to barely make it and get by. And there's no motivation. So they know that really there's nothing. There's no light at the end of the tunnel. They're not going to ever have enough money for a house. they'll never get out of the rut that they are in. They're in such a deep hole that just keeps getting worse and worse. And let one little thing happen, whether it's the car breaks down or somebody is sick and they can't work for 6 weeks, and they're in absolute ruin. They're just barely hanging on between homelessness and just surviving.
But then, you know, on the flip side, there are a number of Bahamians who hustle, right? they do multiple jobs. They are productive. We call them hustlers, but you know, entrepreneurs. They're entrepreneurs. You know, I've met a lot of young people nowadays who are doing that, and you know, they may not be in the academics, so they do, but they're doing something. They're selling stuff and then using the funds which they profits from that to reinvest and stuff like that. So there's that going on too, and we could shine some light on that. But it, you know, it again.
I mean, there's so many ways to make money.
Yeah. I mean, we have
and
some
legally,
of our choices.
And legally.
You know, right. We how we live really is some of our choices, right? And I mean, if you make poor choices, then you're gonna bear the fruit of that. And so, but again, I see a lot of young men out there who are what, you know, you're on the street, you would say hustling, but really. If you look at it, they're entrepreneurs. They're making it, and they're taking the funds that they make and reinvesting, and that's how they grow. Because growth only comes from reinvestment. And I think, as you said, you know, we're in a consumer-driven society, right? And you know, living close to America, being so close to America, is good and is bad for us, right? Because we get that consumerism society that they have, and that doesn't benefit us a whole lot. You know, we are in a free country. We can, you know, listen. There's a lot of opportunities here. If you get education as an equalizer, education is free here. Okay, and as you said, tertiary education is free. Going to College of the Bahamas is practically free.
University of Bahamas.
University
yes.
of Bahamas, yes, it's free, and that's an education that can equalize and make anybody have opportunity out there.
I recall 25 years ago when I was a young intern, I had a friend who used to make 3-4 times what I would make as a doctor. All he would do is every 2-3 weeks, he would go to Cuba, bring back 2 boxes of cigars, and sell them individually to tourists. And he was doing so well. What country in the world can you do that and make a wonderful living?
Well, listen, Doc, I was a former hotelier. And I will tell you, as a former hotelier, when you work in banquets, convention service department, we had food and beverage people, waiters who made $2,000-$3,000 a week. No kidding. And any of the restaurants, I don't know if they're still up there, but when I was $2,000-$3,000, and they could buy cars. Some of them have very minimum education, but they were making much more money than me. Now, I mean, I wasn't upset about it, but I'm just showing you, as you say, the ability in this country, even at that stage or age, or where you are, to make that kind of money. Where can you? Where else can you? I went to the Dominican Republic one time for to do some study on one of the hotels, and the average salary was, I think, $20 a month or $30 at that time a month. Can you imagine paying me $30 a month? And for that job. One job, you could be 800 deep. That means that's how much people want your job, even for that kind of salary. You couldn't pay anybody here for that.
No, you can't.
Huh? I mean, we don't have to look far to look for where are the good men? Where are the honorable men? Where are the men who are willing to sacrifice for our country, put their life on the line? Police officers. The vast majority of police officers are honest, decent, persons who men and women who do not get the salary they deserve. They work ungodly hours. They work shifts. They see the worst of society, the worst of humanity. They see trauma after trauma. And anything that goes wrong, they're the first ones to be there and put their life in peril. Those are good men right there. We have Defense Force officers defending us on the seas. We have persons in the prisons who are putting their life in peril, trying to keep the worst of society away from us. So there are a lot of good men. There are good men in our schools, teachers, again, who, despite their years of education, are unsung heroes because they are there trying to uplift mm-hmm. the future of our country, the young persons. So everywhere we look, there are good men. There are good men in government. There are good men in the current government. There are good men in opposition. So it's not a lack of good men. But as I said, a lot of it I'm worried about is brain drain. And a lot of it is just in general, there are not enough good men. There's too much in the way of self-destructive behavior by the average 16-year-old Bahamian man, the average 18-year-old Bahamian man. There are too many 14-year-olds who are smoking weed every single day. There are too many 15-year-olds who need to have a drink before they go to school.
Well, that's another major problem. I mean, the alcohol consumption, and I don't mean to advocate to do any, but I'll tell you, there's so many of them that come to school drunk. You could see them walking with a beer in their hand.
Yeah, but that, you know what? That's a learned behavior, though. Yeah, yeah. You know, that doesn't, these kids aren't born that way. They learn that. They, you know, you at the beginning, when you started to speak, I think you mentioned 12 to 29, 14 to 29, 15 to 29. Yeah. So that means you have 15 years that where you shape that behavior. You could shape that behavior. So I believe that it's during that time that we have to then try to have them model good behavior, right?
Doc, and that's where the problem is. We have poor examples, too many poor examples.
Well, and that is true. And so they model the behavior that they see outside, right? And so, you know, one generation always says, oh, the other generation is bad, the other man, right? So if those guys, if the young men right now are having that degree, you know, where they're not functioning members of society or becoming functioning members, it's the generation before, really, because they really just emulate the behavior that they see. You know, that's where it is. And so now we have to take some responsibility for that. And if we want to get young men in a positive mind, then we have to show them that.
Well, Doc, right? You know,
that's what we got to do.
I'd like to tell you my story. I grew up in an area called Hospital Lane or West Street. And in those days, there was a little alley called Babylon. And the fellas through that alley were supposed to be some of the worst fellas you could come across. And that's true. I saw so many things that happened. I experienced so many. But I always knew in my own mind, from what I saw, that was not the road that I wanted to take.
Right.
I knew that. I always knew that there was a better way. I didn't have to, not because where I came from mean that I had to continue in that direction. And so I had to change direction. My point is, we blame everything on every, but you have to take some responsibility.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I took some responsibility. I knew that that was not the direction that there was a better life from where I came from.
But Calvin, what was the role, don't you think your mother and your grandmother were instrumental in guiding you and putting you on the path and making you the man you are? What about someone who doesn't have that? Let's say, you know how many households in this country, it's a 25-year-old mother with six kids for five different men. None of the men are in the lives of their children. This woman is living in a structure that shouldn't even be inhabited. And no running water, no electricity, no future in sight. the kids don't even bother to go to school. The mother is depressed, alcoholic, et cetera, et cetera. How do these children make it?
How do they get out of that?
How? Yeah. And there's so many stories like that.
Well, you know, yeah, I must admit, and I have to admit, I had a wonderful mother, wonderful grandmother that was able to direct my life. My mom was a teacher, so there was very little that I could get away with from, and she always wanted the best for us. So I guess you do have a point. It becomes very difficult if you don't have that, what I call stabilizing force, or someone when you come home. Like when I came home from school, I knew I could go to my grandmother. She had food, there was safety, and there was a sense of direction until my mother came.
Yeah, she provided your basic needs,
yeah.
And she held you accountable for certain behaviors, right? Because you couldn't come and just do whatever you wanted.
No.
You couldn't do that. So here lies the stabilizing factor within the home. It starts there. The kids that are 15, that 15 to 29 group, that didn't happen overnight. That started early, and that started in the home, that started in the neighborhood, that started in the community, right? That started in school where there was some failure there too. And this is why you have to go back to the home and the community, right? I mean, a lot of us, when I was growing up, boy, I had the fear of God put in me, right? And that keeps you on a straight road, right? You know that, listen, these are some things that you need to be doing, or you don't need to be involved in this. This is going, you knew right from wrong. You steered away from the kind of behavior that would lead you to make poor choices, and that would, the results of which will get you in jail or, you know, in some situations that you didn't want to embarrass your family or your mother, or whoever that person in your life that, you know, that meant something to you.
Well, you know, you made some very, very, very good points, and maybe we need to go back to basics.
It is back to basics.
Maybe we need to go back to basics, because I mean, you know, there was a whole neighborhood that also grew you up. And sometimes I wonder if you did something wrong, by the time you reach home, your mom knew that you did something wrong, and even though the telephone wasn't ringing. How did that happen?
We don't even know our neighbors now.
We don't even know them, no.
Yeah, but when you have your mother had you when you're 14 or 15 and you drop out of school, you never knew your father.
Yeah.
Who's going to help you with your homework? Who's going to guide you? Who's going to provide even the basics?
But what you see there, Pinto, is usually a repeat scenario. If that mom, well, not in all cases, of course, but when you see teenage pregnancy and mom, and they having the kids at that young age, they can't really take care of those kids. And then when those kids grow up in that scenario, then also... have children at that young age too. And it's a cycle. At some point, that cycle needs to be broken.
And there's also, unfortunately, a cycle of violence. It's all too common.
Obviously.
When you have your father beating your mother, or your mother's boyfriend beating on her, you're, as a male, more likely to beat your future girlfriend or wife.
It's because...
As a daughter, you're more likely to tolerate physical or emotional abuse as well.
Because we see the way people resolve conflicts.
Yeah.
If you grow up seeing conflicts resolved by, you know, a fight or someone punching or raising their voice or stuff like that, then you emulate that behavior.
Or mothers who are so full of hate and anger at their own life, their own choices, full of regret, that they take it out on their kids. He said, what my life would have been if I didn't have you when I was 15? What would have my life been if I didn't meet your no good father and you saddled me with these two kids who make sure that no good man ever wants me?
So that's the
one. Too much self-hate.
That's the one to the 15-year-old there. And when that 1-year-old to 15-year-old internalize all of this, And then that then shapes their behavior because they just model the behavior that they see. Then you get the 15 to 29-year-olds that then you basically, you know, are the criminals out there or the one that, you know, they don't pursue education because they don't value it, right? And if you don't if you don't get education in that situation, because education is really the only thing that's going to get you out of that system. Because the cycle of poverty is, but if you get educated, you get an awareness, because education gives you an awareness. And when you get that awareness, you get opportunities. And that is what will take you out of that system. And this is why I keep saying that I believe that our school system is really where it's not only for to grow academics, but also social learning too, right? Because you have to learn how to socialize in a school system too, right? You got a call?
Good evening. Yeah. This is Urologist Speaks.
Hey, pleasant good evening, Dr. Pinto, Dr. Francis, and Mr. Calvin Green. How you doing?
Great, thank you.
Wonderful, thank
good,
you.
Good, good. Green. Pinto and Francis, I grew up on Cat Island, and of course, the environment there, and most islands are totally different from New Providence. And let's go back in the 70s, 60s, and you'll see how the family island has developed over time and how they lived. And majority of the persons in New Providence came from the family islands. At least over 50% for sure. And their family stayed here in New Providence. They came here to pay rent. They've done, the majority of them done extremely well because they came from a background where people believed in God and believed in community, where community helped each other. In fact, we didn't need any police, even though we had local constables and then probably one man police in the from one end to the next. I grew up on Kent Island. But in those days, we had less than 250,000 people. I say 100,000+ people, right?
Yes.
In our country. I'm not blaming leaders, but there must have been some persons getting together and say, you know something? We have 17, 18 inhabited islands in the Bahamas, and when these people come here, we have a place that they can come. Even if they're not working, they're being educated. I went to BDVI when I first came down here, and I worked in the hotel industry where Calvin had once worked, and Resorts International. And I moved up, and I went off to school, came back. But you know, without a plan for our people and our country, this is what we have. And then, of course, without community building, this is what we have. This is not something difficult to fix. And I've been on the radio talking about, a group of us have a movement called the Bahamas Paradigm Movement. And our focus now is crime prevention. We've been doing that over a decade. We've been seeing some improvement in our communities.
Well, I can say the murder rate is the lowest it's been in a decade. At least that's something positive.
And I've spoken, and I'm going to try to get off as quickly as I can. I spoke with the Minister of Education, the two social services minister, and also the Prime Minister reference to how we can fix our social ills as they relate to social ills that leads to dysfunction. And that crime, we have other dysfunctions in our society other than crime. But if you do not get the right people in the right places, Dr. Francis and Dr. Pinto and Mr. Green, we get the same results. people like myself and other persons, hundreds and thousands of people in this country who can help. If you keep on putting the wrong people in the right place, this is what we have. This is a simple issue, and I said, we're going to fix it. Persons like yourself who comes on the radio on a weekly basis, heralding the message of community and working together. It's a great thing. You guys are doing a very good job. And I'm going to leave it there because, you know what? We could fix this. And I told the government, I say publicly, and we will fix this over time. This is not a difficult thing to fix. Bahamians traditionally are focused, godly people. I'm sure all of you are familiar with Maslow hierarchy of needs. At a low level, the persons are not finding place to live comfortably and to eat and and to find love and be able to feel a part of the situation or country building. This is what we have. But you got to get the right people in the right place for things to happen. I'm going to leave it there. But thank you, guys. Continue to do a good job. I've been listening to you for a while, several weeks. Have a great evening.
Have a good evening, and thank you for those words. I think we can use that as a segue in which you mentioned it's important who's leading us. We have a very important, fundamentally important election next year at some point. And the leaders who are going to be at the helm of our future, we need to choose them wisely. We have to have political intelligence. This is an apolitical show. I'm not going to speak positively or negatively of either political party. But I want to talk about we need to vote. That starts with that. We can't have voter apathy. I know in 2021, in the midst of COVID, we had the lowest turnout. It was like 65% of the registered voters showed up. There were many reasons for that. Usually we have one of the best voter turnouts in the world. We are a very concerned citizenry, and usually it's 90 to 93%. It was 65 in 2021.
I thought it was lower than that.
I remember reading that recently. Okay. And that's astonishing, but you have to look at a lot of factors. First of all, I'm not political at all. I'm not going to speak ill, but I don't understand how an election was called 8 months early in the midst of a surge of COVID-19, where you're told on one hand, don't congregate unless it's fundamentally important. And then you call an election when you didn't have to call an election. And then I remember where persons persons who were told to quarantine during COVID, persons who were known to have COVID, were allowed to come in and vote on the normal lines that everyone else. So I even have family members who I told who are elderly or otherwise who might have had comorbidities, don't go and vote because you're not going to risk your life for that. And a lot of people felt that way.
But that was extraordinary, right? I mean, but just we just had a recent by-election, and I think, if I remember, it was only with 30% of the vote. Yeah. It was only 30% of the voter registry.
That's what they said.
We can't run a country with... I mean, you can't have true, real leadership or choose leadership with 30% of the vote. I mean, like, come on.
You know, there's a thinking about that, and I'm going to use the thinking I understand of the Honorable Arthur DeHano, and I understand Mr. Cassius Stewart repeated it, and that is, it don't matter about 30%. When you win, you win, and when you lose, you lose. So if you didn't vote, we're not concerned with those people who didn't win. When you win, you win.
You win by one, you still win.
So, you know, so that's the philosophy. So who don't vote or who don't come out, forget them.
They keep quiet.
Yeah, that's right. When you win, you win.
But there are too many young persons who basically don't care. They've given up on the system. They don't see any future for this country, so that they don't even bother to vote. They have become disinterested, which is frightening because they are the future of our country. And it's fundamentally important that I think, and it's been mentioned on this show before, even by persons who have called in, we need to take our political arena to the next level. We need to have intelligent debates. We can't just have the cowbells and persons in the shirts handing out pom-poms and everything else, and having quick whips and quoting this and that and whatever, and trying to rile up the crowd. We need to have fundamentally important questions directed to the candidates by their potential constituents. How are you going to change this? How do you feel about this? How do you feel about universal health care? How are you going to turn around the crime situation? How are you going to deal with youth delinquency within this community? Because we need to know what these people have in their mind. Just because they have wearing red or they're wearing yellow doesn't mean we just vote for them just based on that. Mm-hmm. And we need to stop with these rallies where nobody is answering any questions. We need to be more intelligent as a voting base.
Well, Doc, they're not going to stop the rallies. So, as you said, I mean, when a candidate or potential candidate come to see you, you need to have some intelligent questions laid out before you.
But I think this needs to be on the national scale. I think this needs to be televised. It needs to be on the radio where you have the nation listening to our leaders, listening to our persons running for different constituencies, and we need to ask them important questions.
Yeah, we need to talk about the real issues. I mean, we have serious issues in healthcare. We have serious issues about our economy, and certain sectors in the society being excluded from the economy. I mean, you know, we supposed to be a high income country. How many people actually are participating in that high income level, prosperity? Not a lot of Bahamians are.
You
right?
Talk about high income country, and I can drive 5 minutes in many directions, and you're right. Going to see people going to the pump for water.
The majority of Bahamians aren't participating in that. So that's an issue to discuss. Crime is an issue to discuss. What's happening with the young people as we're talking today? These are issues that we need our leaders.
Immigration.
We need our leaders to be able to articulate their plan. How to turn the ship around. All right? Because, I mean, yeah, there's some good aspects of or how do you improve our tourism product? How do we remain competitive as a financial, institutions, right? Agriculture, how are we going to feed ourselves and have food stability and food security? All of those things. I mean, I think somebody needs to talk about that. At least someone who wants to lead this country ought to be discussing those issues.
A lack of affordable housing.
Housing, yeah.
The rising scourge of teenage pregnancy. How are we going to stop that? There's so many things
Someone needs to talk about. But we need to have rational, sensible debates, though. We can't have people shouting at each other and calling this one names and stuff like that. That's true. I think we ought to.
I mean,
even
when we look at north of us, a lot of these debates are staged where obviously the most intelligent persons are creating formulated speeches for questions they know they're going to be asked. And even you'll see sometimes they'll rattle off an answer to a question, and it's not even remote. It might be just remotely...
But we're smaller.
The answer to a question.
We are smaller, and I think we could have more formative debates and really look at each candidate in each constituency. Don't it's not a red or yellow thing, right? But each candidate, you want to be a leader in this constituency. What are the issues in this constituency that you want to bring forward? Let's say if you are successful, what are you going to bring forward? How are you going to improve this constituency? And I think those are the level of questions that we need to put to whoever, those candidates are. When you put yourself out to be a leader, you have to be able to stand up to scrutiny.
Good evening. We have another call coming in. This is Urologist Speaks.
Yes, and good evening.
Good evening, sir.
Okie dokie. I'm listening to the program all along. I want to first of all say, while I waited to get on the air, that Guardian Radio can do more in doing the very same thing that you're speaking about currently, about setting up a platform, so to speak, person saying what needs to be done, or and getting answered the question of what is needed, and so forth. And my first criticism on Garden Radio is that while the day programs from Morning Blend to perhaps the 4 to 6 show with Naughty are archived and available online, programs beyond 6 are not archived. For example, the substantive or the substantial points of contribution that you gentlemen are making right now.
Well, let me correct you, sir. My show and every evening show is available on Spotify and on YouTube. So by 12 noon tomorrow, this show is readily available on Spotify. So I can go on my phone now and I can look at every show for the last year and a half.
Radio website.
It's on Spotify. If you put in The Urologist Speaks, for example, on Spotify, every episode for the last year and a half would come up.
So it's on the separate Guardian Radio.
And even if you go on the Guardian Radio website, there's also a link to it as well.
If you do a search, I'll be checking for that.
All right.
Now for my direct contribution here on those points. We also need to be able to ask and expect of our politicians, those current and those prospective, to make a commitment as to the future of the country. And in the commitment or the promissory note, as it were, one that is binding, that should it be negated on or flaunted on, there are consequences and penalties. And until we get to a point like that, we will still be going through the same circle. But the thing about it, the same thing is happening in just about every country around the world. There's a government here, we call it left-wing government, then there's called a conservative government or the right-wing. And when one comes in, it has their own new agenda, they bring in their own people, they stop with you and cancel, as we said here. And so it seems as though the nature of the political operations worldwide, and how do we actually really and truly stop it? That's a big concern. And so
those are wonderful points. Yes.
Yeah.
You know, I was reading something the other day. There's a principle called the Sununu principle. And it was based, I think, this Governor Sununu, who was the chief of staff, I believe, of Ronald Reagan. And he always says, you know, politicians overpromise in campaigns and underdeliver in government. You know? And so that's what we, you know, in campaigns, I can do this, I'll do this, we can do that. But when you get in government, you know, it's a different scenario.
Well, there's always a... There's a thing about that where the fellow was campaigning and he took him to a place and he showed him everybody was having a great time. Everybody was happy. And the next day he took him to the same place and all hell broke loose. And he said, "What happened?" And he said, "Well, yesterday we were campaigning. Today is..."
Today we govern it.
That's
the Sununu principle.
Yeah, today we govern it.
Overpromising campaigns, underperforming government.
I think what happens is that people, there's something that happens that they forget when they come to government. There's some sort of button that goes off and it says, "Let me forget what I promised you while we were campaigning." Or maybe they have to conform to what I call a certain way of how things happen in government.
But I think more so, there's optimism and then there's reality, right? Optimism seeks we can run for this for the stars. We're gonna go beyond space. We're gonna do all of this. That's optimistic people tend to do that. But reality tend to to bring you and cut you down. Is a more measured response, and knowing that certain things you can get done, some things are really difficult, and some things are really impossible, right? And you get the easy things done, the difficult things you do the best you can, and then, but don't promise the real impossible things that are not going to get there. And I think there are some realities out there, right? But yeah, there's a difference between optimism and reality. And I think we need to be grounded in reality, and that is what happens, I think, when politicians go from campaigning and they get into government. The reality of all the situations are before them, and the fiscal issues they meet, okay, and then they got to backtrack. So I believe that's what it is, right? But then the populace need to recognize that. Yeah. When people come over promising these things, don't buy into all that optimism, right? Look, we have real problems. Can you solve these real issues, these real problems that we have? And I think that's we need to hold everybody's feet to the fire then. And that's the accountability that we as Bahamians, as citizens, who, when we vote for these folks, we got to, like, listen, this. We want you to fix some real issues here.
You know, Doc, I always say this, and I'll say it again. We have a great country, but I think for most Bahamians, it is very, very frustrating because we could be so much better. We could be so much better and what we do. I mean, we waste a lot of money on maybe a building that you know, or you give it the contract to someone that you know can't build what we need. And so half of the money is wasted or is just not accounted for.
That's called conflict of interest. Yeah. Or some people say that's not conflict of interest, but corruption.
Yeah.
We have another call coming in. Good evening. This is Urologist Speaks.
Good afternoon, sir. How y'all doing?
Very well, thank you.
Good. I was holding a while, so some of my thoughts slip away. But one or two of them really stuck with me. My thing with the debate thing, if you don't want to have a debate with every candidate in every constituency, the two candidates or the three candidates in every constituency, why not let us organize a debate with the three leaders or the four leaders, whatever groups are there.
Brilliant point. Yes, I agree.
Or if you don't want to do that, you can do that. Then let the deputy leaders debate. Then let the chairman of the parties debate. That they're like the three main offices in the organization. Right?
I agree.
Now my problem now, I live in the Bamboo Town constituency. I learned on day before yesterday that now the Free National Movement that I am highly against, they're now sending Dr. Dwayne Sands in here. I want to know what Dr. Dwayne Sands' tie is to Bamboo Town. Why he chose Bamboo Town? He made a statement and he said that the people in Elizabeth made a mistake and voted for Ms. Jobet Colby David. So if they had made a mistake, he should have stayed right there to unseat the mistake. It's a bad thing to get beat in two elections by one woman. But it's a dangerous thing to get beat in two elections by two different women. That's like a man got married. 10 minutes before his wife didn't make it. Get married again. Him and an ex didn't make it. That means he is a problem. Even a girl and two women can be a problem.
I'd like to emphasize this is an apolitical show. We're not supporting either party. But I'll just say on a personal note, Dr. Francis and I have worked with Dr. Sands.
He's a great colleague.
I don't know him on the political side of things, but as a person who is a good person in terms of loving.
Absolutely.
loving this country. Loved this country, and he sacrificed endlessly to save hundreds of persons who were at death's door.
He's a mentor to many of us. He's a mentor to me. I would say that. I could say that hands down, anytime, anywhere.
Yeah.
Sans is a mentor to me. And I wouldn't be where I am right now without Sans and what he did in helping me to achieve, you know.
Oh, I mean, 25 years ago, he used to berate me about the different sutures, and I would have to go home and practice sutures and come back to him the next day.
Absolutely.
And I better go off and specialize, and I better come back. And so I don't know the political side of him, but I'm not going to say
he's a good man.
He's a good man. And as I say, I don't support red or yellow or anything else, but the good in both sides. Both sides have a lot to offer. But we said a lot today. We need to come together. We need to save the young men in our country, or we'll not have a country. Any closing words, Mr. Calvin Green?
Well, I'd just like to wish the country the very, very best as we go into the Christmas season, that we have a great time and that we don't kill each other. We just enjoy each other. And that's a good season.
And I think you got away because most people don't know you're part of the Junkanoo Committee. So we could have had a big show just on that. Maybe another time. All right, yeah. Dr. Francis, what are your closing remarks?
Yeah, man, let's just be intentional about improving our individual families and communities this holiday season. Got to be intentional about that.
All right, be safe, Bahamas, and have a good week. Good night.
Good night, Bahamas.
Comes early prevention.
Put lead in your pencil, make you feel like a champion.
Rise up again, let nothing keep you down. To live your best.
Here be urologist.
Speak. Oh yeah, oh yeah.
Think you're losing grip of your manhood. Don't give up on hope.
Don't be ashamed. It's time to take control. Get some help from the urologist.
And you will find
he'll help you solve your problems.
On 96.9.